Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I am the slightly congested, but still very present and still very active founder of Mixergy.com, which is home of the ambitious upstart. Yeah, as you can hear from my voice, I am recovering from a cold. And you know what? One of the surprising things that I've discovered is that some of the well-known companies here in Silicon Valley actually don't do all of their own coding. They don't do all of their own programming. Today's guest runs a company that built mobile apps for Sidecar, Hipster, and many other highly regarded Silicon Valley companies. I invited him here to talk about how he built up his business by building up other companies' products. His name is Sunil Kandari. He is the founder of Mocria. It's a mobile solutions and strategy company based in California. Hey, Sunil, before I even do my sponsorship spot, I don't think I did your company justice. Am I pronouncing it right? Mocria.
Yep, that's perfect.
Okay, good.
Mocria.
And this interview is sponsored by TopTal. If you're looking for the right developer to come in and work with your company, not just one that knows the programming language that you're using, but also the environment that you like to work in, I urge you to check out TopTal. That's the company that I use, T-O-P-T-A-L. They are a network of elite pre-vetted software developers, people who've been proven to be in the top 3% among their peers globally. So you tell TopTal what you're looking for. They will search through their network. They'll find candidates that have been tested. They will interview them, and they'll present you with the top one or two people so that you can talk to them. If you like them, if they're a good fit for you, you can hire them. And often they can start the very next day working full week, part-time, or even if you just need a few extra hours a week, they're available to you. It's all guaranteed if you go to TopTal.com. Sign up, check them out, and tell them that Andrew of Mixergy sent you. TopTal. Sunil, welcome.
Thank you, Andrew. It's a real pleasure and privilege.
It's an honor to have you on here. I had no idea how much work you've done. Sidecar. I've used their app to call up drivers to pick me up. I don't own a car. How much of their app did you build?
We built the entire version 1.0 of their driver side app.
And what did 1.0 of their app do?
The functionality is the same as it is today. They might have undergone some design changes and stuff, but this was back in 2011. We built the first version of the driver side app, and we actually helped a ton of Silicon Valley companies like ThreadFlip, Simple Geo, Hipster. We work with Glassdoor, LegalZoom, a lot of these companies. Yeah.
What did you do for Simple Geo?
So it's actually a very interesting story because Simple Geo in some ways actually put us on the map. Joe Stump, he was a chief architect of Dig, and he was the CTO of Simple Geo.
And Joe Stump is highly regarded, very well known in the tech community. He's somebody that other developers look up to and admire and trust. Uh-huh.
Absolutely. So I think it was a Twitter message saying he was looking for Rockstar Android and iOS developers or some form of that. I just reached out back to him, and he said he invited me. At that point, the company was nascently forming. So he invited me to his office, and I basically pitched him saying, hey, he was looking, at that point, Simple Geo had, was building an iOS and an Android SDK, and they were short-staffed. So I told him, we can continue building the features for that iOS SDK and Android SDK, and also maintain it. So I was doing a lot of the iOS work. My brother, he was the CTO, he was doing a lot of the Android work. He really liked us. He loved the work that we did. And then he actually put us on a CTO list at the venture capital firm that he was that was funding.
What does that mean that he put you on a CTO list?
I think they have an internal list. This was First Round Capital. So they had an internal list where they actually communicate with each other. So he just recommended us saying, hey, there's this company that I've been working with, and I've been very, very happy with them. So based on that, he actually connected us with Path, Home Run, a lot of other companies. We did some BlackBerry work for Path, Home Run. It was a Groupon clone. Getting to the point, he actually put us on the map. A lot of the tech startups actually reached out to us. After he
Right, let me understand how you do this, how you get to a point where you could be the guy who builds the apps for the people who are so highly regarded and well-known here. And frankly, you're building a successful, profitable company doing it, no outside funding, all bootstrapped, all yourself. Let's see how you got here. And before we even get to the business, I want to understand the man. You're a guy who grew up in India, yep. And you're, what was it like to grow up in India for you?
I come from a middle-class family, so it was pretty good. My parents, I think my dad, you know, he was the first person out of his village to graduate. I mean, he went on to get his master's degree, but we still go back to that village and stuff. But I myself had a decent middle-class life. All my education was in English medium schools. By the point we got to 10th grade, nearing college, we had, reversals of fortune. I think some of the notes that Jeremy had, we touched upon that.
Don't worry about it. You're talking about Jeremy in the pre-interview.
Yeah.
What you told him was 10th grade, you and your family had some financial trouble. Is it tough for you to talk about today?
Probably. I mean, there isn't a lot of it. There isn't a lot there, but I mean, the basic point was there was some reversals of fortune because of, my father's business had some setbacks. Mm-hmm. But that actually gave me some grounding in the sense that, not to take anything for granted, work really hard.
Because it felt like at any moment something could be taken away from you. You know what? I had a similar situation. My dad was also an entrepreneur, and I knew as an entrepreneur, the whole thing could go away like that. Yeah. So when I would see my friends write on their notebooks in school or their loose leaf binders, I would never write on the outside of it because I said, if things go bad, I might need to use this binder again the following year. And I don't want everyone to know that it's the same one that had my first and second grade notes on it. I don't want any of that old stuff. I want it to look or at least feel a little bit like it's brand new. And so that is a sense of instability a little bit, right? And hunger makes you feel like you have to prove yourself every day.
Yep. You hit it on the spot. I think that's that develops a few ethos in you. And
what does it do for you today? Do you watch pennies in a way that other people don't? Do you watch the expenses at the office? You do. Give me an example of that.
Even today, I don't have an office manager. We don't have a proper HR person. I mean, we're about 30 people. We have developers across the world, even across US. We have in Finland.
You're not going to spend money on an HR person, even though you have that many developers.
I think I should probably do it at some point. But since the company itself is bootstrapped, it's an expense that I find hard to justify at this point. But yeah, I mean, I think we need to do it pretty soon. So.
How about another one? Give me another example of how your dad's setback at the 10th grade is affecting the way you think about money today and the way you thought about starting a business when you launched.
I think, one of the things for me is I don't see it as an up and down. When we make big deals, we make a lot of money. I don't see it as, I've hit the mark. My perspective is, we want to build a long-term business. I want this company to last, 10, 20 years.
Okay.
I think I'm more equanimous. Big wins or big losers doesn't bother me as much. Mm-hmm. I just take them in stride.
I see. All right. So then you go on. You graduate from school yourself. Mm-hmm. You end up being a software developer working on enterprise. You come to the U.S., right?
Yep.
You get your green card, and as soon as you get your green card, what does that make you think about your job?
The job isn't attractive anymore. The first instinct was, I wanted to do something. I actually moved to US in 99. By the time I got my green card, it was like 2007, 2008, I actually moved to Silicon Valley. And the first thing that, I started discussing with my brother was, we need to do something.
I see. Yeah. Because when you have the green card, or before you have the green card, your stay in the U.S. is dependent on the job that you have.
Yep.
Right? Once you have the green card, you're welcome to go and start your own company or float around as you'd like. Right? And so you say almost immediately, call your brother. Why your brother? What was your brother doing at the time?
He's a great software developer. He was a chief architect. This was back even before smartphones were in vogue. This was back in 2004. I used to visit him in Phoenix, and we'd be driving around, and he has this old flip phones, 8080 Nokia phones.
Uh-huh.
And he'd get driving directions, turn left, turn right, and there's an arrow point. This was software that was not even ever released. They built a product for, he used to work for Motorola, and he was the chief architect on this. So they built this product called Viamoto. Later, GM acquired them. A lot of the software that they built actually powers OnStar. So
what did his software do before GM bought it to power OnStar?
I think it was an internal project for them. It was turn-by-turn navigation system that they were trying to build.
I see. So it wasn't released out to the public. He had it because he worked on it, and it was turn-by-turn directions. Then it was bought out, and it was part of OnStar system. He also had an app that appeared on the first Nexus phone's home screen, right?
Yep. Yeah, this was, I think this was in 2009. This is when actually the idea crystallized for us, because he's on an internal family email, he said, hey, the app I worked on is going to be on the home screen of Google Nexus. And then we had started having discussions, and I was like, what does it take? I used to work on enterprise software, but I didn't have the iPhone or Android development skills, and he had. And I was like, what does it take to build an app? And then he started educating me, and then I was like, we should do it for ourselves. And we're doing all this stuff for all different kinds of companies. Why don't we do it for ourselves?
Why don't we partner up and do it? What was his app that was on the home screen of the Nexus phone that Google released?
I think it was Trim. At that point, he was actually working for Trimble Outdoors. It was a GPS navigation app.
Wait, and didn't the Nexus have its own navigation through Google Maps? Or it had that plus it had the other one?
Yeah, I mean, they used to do a lot more. I don't think it was a simple navigation app. They used to do geocaching, a lot of other features on it. I don't exactly remember the details.
I see. What you do remember, though, was, hey, this is cool to be able to create an app and see it on so many people's phones. Why are we doing this cool stuff for other companies? Why don't we partner up and do it for ourselves? Did you quit as soon as you had that realization, as soon as you got the green card and knew this is your direction, or did you wait a little bit?
I did wait a little bit. I think I quit as soon as I got, our first client.
I see.
I actually went to my boss and said, hey, I'm actually quitting. And he was like, he was like, you'll come back in 3 months or 6 months. And he's like, I don't want to rehire you. So he's like, I want to keep you on the payroll. So he actually would pay me 20% of my salary. He said, don't come back to work. You don't need to come back to work, but I still want you to be on the payroll so I can rehire you.
Because then it's easier to bring you right back in.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you're still making 20% of your salary. This is UC Berkeley.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you work as part of the university system.
I did a lot of infrastructure upgrades and things like that. So he wanted somebody that can actually, troubleshoot if something goes wrong.
Okay. So you were also on standby. In case something goes wrong, they're going to call Sunil, and Sunil's going to fix it.
So, yeah.
All right. So one of the things that you do is you go and you read the book to learn about iOS development. What is the book for you?
I think it was called Beginning iPhone Development. This was 2009. So mm-hmm. the first contract, the pre-interview, I was telling you that, iPhone app dev code, I don't think that app website even exists. So this was for a realtor company called Real Estate Bottom Line. So I told
This was your first customer?
Yeah.
How did you get this first customer?
So I just Googled and I found a lead gen company, and basically you had to pay a couple hundred dollars for every lead they send. I spent some money, but got a few leads, and this one lead worked out. He had some really good desktop apps, and he wanted to bring them to on mobile.
All right, that's a pretty good deal. $200, you end up getting a client from it?
I think I paid for more than one lead.
Oh, I see. Right. So this one worked out. How did you know that you were ready to work on his project?
You know, first I got the requirements. You know, basically I saw the app and I knew we could build this. I talked to my brother Praneel, so, and he's like, "Yeah, we can do this." And he was still working at that point. I quit my job first, and yeah, I read that iPhone app dev book, you know, cover to cover. It took me 3 weeks, and then we started developing the app. But interestingly, by the end of developing that app, I realized, okay, I need more help. So we did our first hire. This was a guy based in India. He was in Kerala, Mohit. He's still with us. I saw him on some, you know, I think it was on GitHub or Stack Overflow. I forgot where. I saw that he knew what he was doing. So I reached out to him. I hired him. He was our first hire. And since then, that model has actually worked out. That, you know, we find the best talent wherever there is. We tried initially when we were in the Bay working with these really cool startups. I tried to hire, you know, developers here, and it was way, way too expensive. It was hard to actually attract them for us.
Here's where for you? What part of California?
Yeah, in Bay Area.
What part of the Bay Area?
I'm in Cupertino, so yeah.
Okay. So that really is a hard place to hire. And so you said, you know what, instead of even placing a help wanted ad, what we're going to do is look online to see who is active, who's smart, who knows what we need help with, and then we'll go recruit that person.
Yep.
And that was your process.
Yeah.
So how much were you paid for that first project?
That project, I think at the end, we got close to $20K.
And before you even got that money, that $20K, you were willing to quit your job because... And the surprising thing is that's not enough for you to live on for a long time, especially not if you plan to split it with your brother, if you eventually end up hiring a developer. So what was it that made you say, all right, I'm ready to quit. I'm ready to go all in. How did you know that there'd be enough money?
I think part of it was, I just took a leap of faith, but I also wanted to, you know, I was looking at mobile. I think at that year, AdMob was sold to Google, and they, you know, the AdMob, the venture firm was actually doing a celebratory gathering for AdMob. So I actually attended their that meetup. And actually that sowed some of the seeds that I thought, okay, mobile is going to, you know, there's going to be a tectonic shift. You know, computing as we know it is going to completely change. Everything is going to happen on mobile or touch devices. The form factor, you know, the desktop and laptop form factors are going to go away. So I wanted to be part of mobile.
I see. So it wasn't so much that you got this first client. It was that you knew this was the future. You knew you were capable. And yes, the new client helped confirm that you were going to do okay here, or helped you feel comfortable that you were going to do okay. There's no confirmation.
Yeah, it's just a validation that, yeah. I mean, there's need for this kind of services.
Where did you go to buy a lead? What I'm finding is from people who listen to me is they like to hear specifics. Is there a place that you recommend, or do you remember the name of the place where you got that lead?
I think it was iPhoneAppDevCode.com.
iPhoneAppDevCode.com?
Code. Q-U-O-T.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know if it's still there. I haven't used it in the last, I used them initially, you know. But yeah, we now have sales team.
Yeah, they are still there. Frankly, they look a little shady. It doesn't look like the most, maybe shady isn't the right word, but it doesn't look like the most developed site itself. iPhoneAppQuotes.com, that's what I see. And so the thing that it tells me is, if you're going to a site like this, you're completely disconnected from the app world. It's not like you have friends and connections and people who are building apps, number one. And number two, you must not have liked sales enough to start making cold calls. You must have just said, all right, I'll pay some money.
Yeah, I'm not an, you know, natural salesman, for sure. We hired about a year back, we brought on some full-time sales help. But before then, I used to do that. I'm actually good at pitching. You know, when I go and meet a CTO, I can talk their language. I can give them confidence. But doing cold calls and stuff,
to get to that person is not your thing.
Not my thing.
Okay. So that's how you got your first customer. How'd you get your second?
Like I said, I think Joe Stump, you know, on Twitter. I found him on Twitter, responded to his tweet. I went and met with him since I was here in Bay Area. And then that kind of it started the ball rolling for us.
Do you remember what you said to him before you met him in person that got that in-person meeting?
I think I said, hey, Joe, I think we have a team, we can help you. And the team was me and my brother.
I see. And that was it, because he, and, but there was no way for you to communicate credibility, was there?
I think part of it was I kind of showed some of the stuff that Pranil did, with Trimble Outdoors. We had a lot of GPS experience. When I say we, it's actually Pranil. Since he did the Viamoto, and then he was working for Trimble Outdoors. Forgot the name of the company he was working for when he quit. I can't remember.
Okay.
But anyway,
your brother had enough experience that that it would be enough to get a meeting with Joe Stump. And then once you get in with him, do you remember what you said that convinced him?
I think I showed him some of the apps that we worked on.
Even before you built your own, you're showing him even the apps that your brother worked on for another company.
And mm-hmm. we had the real estate bottom line. I think we had a couple of other really small apps that we built just to showcase.
Okay.
Simple Geo was also building location infrastructure stuff. So GPS capabilities and things like that. Location awareness, those are areas that they needed help with. So the skill set kind of was a good fit.
Okay. How do you know what to charge him?
At that time, I guess I didn't know. It was like, if I remember it right, we were charging $70 to $75 an hour.
How much was it?
$70 to $75 an hour.
$70 to $75 an hour to get the two of you guys who are experts at this?
Yeah.
Who are in the U.S., who he doesn't have to communicate with over Skype, he can actually sit and have coffee with?
Absolutely.
So in retrospect, you really underprice yourselves.
Yeah.
I see.
For the first year and a half, I think we did underprice ourselves. But but we were also looking to, our main criteria was, we wanted to do good work, build great apps, and build the credibility.
Okay. Your brother's company, the one that he worked for, was called Trimble Navigation. He was the lead mobile developer there.
Yeah.
That's where he was, and that's what gave him the experience that persuaded Joe Stump. How long did it take you to produce your first piece of solid work for Joe?
I think in the first few weeks, 3 to 4 weeks, there was also some maintenance work, some features that needed to be added. We were able to actually produce in the first 3 to 4 weeks. Solid work. So
all right, so if we're going to talk about how to get first clients and pass on some of your experience to other people, the most valuable thing is be around your customers. It seems like what worked for you, right? Have experience. Even if it's working for someone else, we tend to undervalue what we did when we worked for a company and overemphasize the work that we do when we're building it for our own business. But in your experience, what your brother did at Trimble helped you get other work afterwards.
Absolutely, yeah. I think being at the right place, part of it is also luck, right? Me looking at Twitter, seeing Joe Stump, him taking, taking a chance on us. But I think for me, what worked out is being persistent. I never gave up because there were days.
What was the persistent? When were those days? It seems like it worked out pretty nicely. You come out, you buy a lead from a site that I never heard of before. You suddenly get a customer. You then find Joe Stump on Twitter. Where did you need to be persistent in the beginning?
I think that's a story in retrospect. But before I got that first quote or the first lead, or even before I convinced Joe Stump, there were days when it was like, okay. I actually did some cold calls too. Took a list of companies, just cold calls. I was like, okay, this is never going to work.
Why didn't it? Because what were you like on those calls?
It's not just about the calls. It was like, okay, it's just the two of us. I used to see other companies, app development companies, and I was like, this is never going to work. Why would somebody hire us instead of XYZ that has a great website, tons of developers. But just being persistent, I think doing all the right things will fall in place. But you and you also have to be lucky. I see.
So you're saying that you stuck with it even when you were making sales calls and the sales calls didn't work. You stuck with it even when you were getting some early leads and they didn't translate into sales. And you had the guts to still go into Joe Stump and say, I think we can work this out, even though you didn't have a track record with your business yet, or it sounds like you didn't even have a real website yet.
I think we had a real website, but the point you mentioned here, having the guts to actually go there and tell, it's true, because I was hesitant. I was like, this is a great technology company. I mean, they were ranked, in 2011, they were ranked one of the top startups to actually watch out for. This is a top technology company, and do we even have the capability to do it?
What does your name mean, Mokriya?
So it's a play on a Sanskrit word. Kriya stands for action. Mo is a short form for mobile.
Mm. So mobile action.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, you said you were willing to do Amazon Kindle development, iPad development, BlackBerry development, Android, and of course the iPhone. You just said we could do it all because you figured you could learn it.
Yep.
Interesting. All right. So you get your first customer. Do you need to start hiring people to work with Simple Geo?
Yes. Yeah. We needed to hire people. Like I said earlier, I think one of our biggest hurdles was to actually, we still do rigorous technical interviews. I think one of the hallmarks for us is we're actually able to actually hire really good talent. What I saw initially was the people that we wanted to make offers for, they wouldn't take our offers. But we would still get some people that we can actually work with. But we really wanted really good talent. So couldn't do it here in Silicon Valley. So one of the first hires was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He's actually now a CTO at a funded startup. So we just said, there's talent across.
How do you get the CTO of a funded startup to come to you?
He's now a CTO.
Okay. Yeah. So when you found him, here's one thing that you told Jeremy about your hiring process. You said it's very stringent. We really make people, we really do a lot of research before we find someone, make sure they're the right fit. That's important to us. Where they are is not as important. We've hired people in Serbia, Argentina, Israel, UK, India, and across the US. So what is this hiring process? Is it still you look online for people who are doing interesting things and then you court them?
Right now we actually go beyond that. I mean, we put ads on places like We Work Remotely, coming back to that point, right? But so the first hire was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I think I found him on Hacker News.
Okay.
I saw a couple of comments from him, and I thought, hey, this guy looked awesome. He was just graduating. He didn't even finish graduating, but he was. He was fantastic.
What was it about him that told you that he was fantastic?
Just the work that he did. He was not even an iPhone developer. He had some Mac development experience, and we hired him because we needed some HTML5 stuff for BlackBerry work.
Okay,
this was back in the day. He delivered it, and then I said, "Hey, you have Mac development experience. How about you actually work on this iOS app?"
I see. And so, one of the first things you did was you tested him with a small project before you even hired him.
Yep.
I see. Okay. And do you test him before you even test him with a small project? Is there something else that goes into it?
Yeah, we do. Pair programming.
Walk me through your whole process, start to finish, so that we could learn from you, because you are hiring really strong people, and frankly, hiring at all the developers is really tough. And convincing them to leave their work and come to work for you is really tough. So beginning to end, what's the process?
Okay, cool. The first process, first step for me is I interview them. A couple of things that I look for in developers is for them, this should be more of a craft rather than just a job.
And how can you tell? What do you ask in an interview that shows you that it's a craft for them?
These guys have side projects. They tinker with stuff. A lot of them, what I found is they don't come through the traditional process. They're either self-taught or they stumbled on it. These things, the side projects, being up on different technology stacks. Just having a conversation with them, it's easy to suss out if this is just a job for them or if they're.
Do you have a few questions that help tease that out?
My interview is definitely a lot open ended. I just dig into their background. I ask them, you know, what they've done before. Basically, drilling into, you know, some of their specific projects. You know, asking questions about why they did it this way versus that way.
I see. They did it, how they worked, what they produced themselves. You want to look at side projects because side projects tell you that they love this so much that they're doing this even in their spare time. Are you looking for anything else?
The side projects are not absolutely necessary, even talking to them about the projects that they did for companies, right? There's a lot of information.
That's enough. About this? How do you even get them to talk to you? Just because they have a project online doesn't mean that they want to be recruited to go work somewhere else, right? One of the things that you see on Hacker News a lot is people saying they hate recruiters.
Since I'm the founder, one way it's easier. I don't start the conversation as, hey, you know, do you want to work for me? Start the conversation if it's relevant to what they're discussing. I discuss that and I ask them, hey, what's your background? What are you currently doing? And then ask them, hey, you know, would you be interested in talking to me about this stuff? It's a gradual conversation.
And but by this stuff, do you mean about a job, or do you still talk to them about first projects?
It depends. If I have projects, I talk to them about projects. If I find somebody really talented that I think would be a good fit for us, I just say,
okay,
you know, we might have a job for you. But we still never skip the interview process. I have to talk. You know, Pranil has to talk. We have a couple of other team members that talk to them. There's some coding exercises, not necessarily puzzles or anything. We just take a simple task, have them do the coding.
And then you look at it.
Look at it.
Have you ever said yes to someone and your brother said no?
And those turned out to be a mistake.
He made a mistake, you're saying?
No.
You made a mistake. What did he catch that you didn't catch?
He's a lot more technical than I am. Now, for me, I think it's, if somebody is very convincing,
you're much more likely to fall for it, and he's not.
He's not. He's like...
I see. All right. So I see how you're hiring them. What about how did you get the next set of clients?
I think a lot of it was word of mouth. So initially we were working with a lot of tech startups. And then word of mouth, AT&T actually called in. They have a group here in Silicon Valley called AT&T Foundry. Mm-hmm. So they actually, out of the blue, called us, and I actually went and met with them. We did some projects for them for connected car, smart watches. Mm-hmm. SanDisk is a big client for us. We actually launched a product for them called iXpand. It's an
extra. I know that AT&T just found you, probably because they heard about you from somebody. You don't even know who it was, but you know that it's something like that. And then they contacted you, they vetted you, and they hired you. What about... SanDisk, how did SanDisk find you, or how did you find them?
So a product manager from SanDisk reached out to us.
How do they know about you?
I think in 2013, we actually launched an app, an internal project called Mocria Craigslist. So we said, you know, Craigslist is, you know, about 10 years old or 15 years old, just a sea of blue links on a big web page. If it was a mobile-first company, if it was starting today, how would a classified apps look like?
Okay, and you said, we want to make that.
Maybe we want to make that.
Did you start calling up Craigslist and asking them if they'd hire you?
Yeah, we didn't ask them to hire us, but we said, at that point, they were actually shutting down third-party developers that were doing stuff on top of their data. So I actually asked them for a licensing agreement. I said, you know, there's a ton of data that you guys have. I want to build a first-class mobile experience.
Can I license it instead of just using it?
Yeah.
How did you get through to them? That's a pretty interesting story.
Blind emails. I emailed the CEO, I think at least four or five times. So the fifth time, he got tired, I guess, and he he routed me to their legal department.
Okay.
And then I spoke with their legal department, and they had a legal agreement, and we started. Okay. And that actually got a lot of press for us. You know, Wall Street Journal covered us.
And you guys were going to I saw that the Wall Street Journal covered you for this. You guys were going to build it and pay them a licensing fee every month?
It's every year.
Every year. What's the financial structure? What do you pay them every year?
It's 15% of the revenue that you make.
I see. So no revenue, you don't pay anything.
Okay. Interesting. There's an upfront minimum cost. I think it was like $3,000.
That's it. That's a pretty good deal. But it also means that you're basically, you could potentially be giving up, oh no, I was going to say you potentially are giving up 50% of your revenue roughly, because Apple takes 30, then they take 15.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you start building it. How do you know what to build? Do you do any customer development, or do you just start going?
We didn't do customer development. Initially, it was product. It's product ideation in terms of, you know, how can we build a really compelling mobile-first experience for this market, basically classifieds.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually came up with different kinds of concepts. Then we started building it. Once we started building more of a prototype, we started testing it. We went to Starbucks. We actually, we heavily tested it.
Instead of showing it to people and having them use it.
Yep.
Okay. Where was your revenue going to come from? By the way, I have the app here. It's hard for me to show it on the screen, but I'll try. There it is, right?
Yeah.
Where's the revenue coming from for it?
There's an in-app purchase, but right now we actually made it entirely free because we were not making any money.
Okay.
So we just said it's more of a branding exercise for us at this point.
Okay. I like the way I don't know that I can actually show it, but the way that items fly in is pretty cool.
Thank you.
All right, so you spend some time both building it and talking to customers about it, and then you finally launch. How many weeks into the project do you launch?
Took us about 4 months.
4 months?
Yeah.
4 months of work.
Yeah.
How much time do your team spend on it?
At least two devs, and then we did a lot of design.
Full-time?
Yeah.
Wow, so two full-time devs working for 4 months, plus design work, plus your time, and then you launch it. The Wall Street Journal covers you. How'd you get the Wall Street Journal to cover you?
We actually hired a PR firm.
Okay, so you're even hiring a PR firm for this, okay?
So they reached out, and they basically back then the app. I mean, right now I think it's not the most innovative app, but back then when we launched it, early 2013, it was really amazing. You know, we came up with some new design paradigms in terms of how to navigate the app. You know, within two tabs, you can actually change the category. Everything that can be done in the app, we tried to do it within couple of tabs. So I think and also the idea of, you know, Craigslist and how we did, I mean, it was a 10x improvement. We came up with design innovation, and Craigslist is not known for design innovation. So I think helped us. You know, Wall Street Journal and Time, a lot of the tech press picked up on it.
Okay.
I mean, that's a second level of actually getting our name out there.
I see that the Wall Street Journal article starts with one of Silicon Valley's unsung heroes has a new tune, its own. That alone is almost worth all the money that you spend on PR. But then it goes on. Mobile app design company Mocrea, the low-key 12-person company that quietly designed all or some of the iOS, Android, and BlackBerry apps for Sidecar, Hipster, Simple Geo, and Thread Flip. Has launched its first independent effort. So right away, they're telling the world, this is the company that you never heard of, but actually is doing a lot of work that you've seen.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you get all that credibility, you launch, and then what happens to your app?
It doesn't go. I mean,
It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. It's a typical, you know, startup. You know, you see it. It's a big launch. There's a lot of activity, and then you realize, hey, you know, you cannot really make money out of this.
Why not?
There wasn't enough downloads to make that happen. I mean, right now we have 1 million downloads, but you know, the 99 cent one time, you know, I think the economics of it doesn't work.
It was 1 million downloads for free, and then how many of those were upgraded?
Probably 10%. We were actually seeing good amount of conversion. We were seeing close to 10% conversion. But also, you know, we don't have any APIs. We just scrape the data, even though we have a licensing agreement. Craigslist doesn't expose this data in a reliable manner. So any changes that they make breaks the ham. So for us, it didn't make sense, and I didn't want to lose focus in terms of what we were doing. So we kind of said, you know, put it on a back burner. Actually, Craigslist was interested. They actually had a couple of meetings with me
about buying it.
Oh, potentially buying that. Yeah.
Okay. Why didn't they buy it?
I don't know. This is a public interview, but I don't think Craigslist is the sort of company where they do acquisitions or buy stuff.
You say this is a public interview that maybe you don't know if you should say it publicly?
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
But yeah, they were very nice people. I mean, I met with Jim, CEO. They were amazing. They're like, you know, really, really thank you for doing this the right way. They really like that. It was the best experience. But I don't, they're a small, nimble company. There's still 40 people. They do it in a very traditional manner. I don't think they do the Silicon Valley type of acquisitions and things like that. So
you say we put it on the back burner, but that's not an easy decision to make. You are investing 2 full-time developers in this out of a 12-person team, and it's more resources, obviously, on top of it, at a small company. And then when it doesn't work out, how do you come to terms with that?
It was a tough process. I mean, we actually lost a couple of people in the team too. One of our product designers that worked on that, he was so disappointed. It just sucked the air out of him. He was like, he left for a different startup. He's also a chief product officer at a different
because product. He was so disappointed that this didn't work out.
This didn't work out. He had so many hopes on this, and then I kind of learned a lesson that, you know, anything you do, don't make it a huge launch.
I see, because you started telling the team, this is our time. We're going to leave our mark. We're going to create our app. If we could do it for other people, we could do it for ourselves too. It's going to be a huge business on its own, potentially. You didn't even say potentially. You just believed it.
Yeah.
I see. And then what was it like when you had to tell everyone, hey, it's just not working out?
I mean, a lot of people actually kind of understood that it was a gradual process. I mean, for me, for the founders, it was pretty hard because we invested a ton of money in it. At the end of the day, we still had a really great team. The team, we could work with any tech startup, execute their products. So we know we had something really good on our hands. Mm-hmm. At that point, even companies like LinkedIn, Roku, approached us for acquisition out of acquisition interest because
they all want a good dev team, and you guys have that.
Yeah, I think we generated a lot of buzz with this Mocha Craigslist app. So a lot of people saw it. It was on Hacker News for an entire day in the top on the front page of Hacker News.
So I have people in my audience. You're a Mixergy fan, right? You signed up for Mixergy Premium back in 2012.
Yeah, I was actually going to tell you at the start of the interview. I said, you know, initially it was very hard. You know, a lot of the time I would just watch Mixergy interviews just for inspiration. And
well, thank you.
Seeing how other people do it.
I was talking to a few members just last week. I'm looking at the calendar to see if that's true. Yeah, it was just last week, and one of them told me, you know, I have a dev shop. We're doing okay. I'd like to start building my own product, but he said, I have a family. I have obligations to my team who also has families. I'm worried about getting it wrong. And he said he signed up so he can watch some interviews and learn how to do it right. What advice do you have for someone like him about how to transition from building other people's products to building your own, either doing it right or avoiding some mistakes?
I mean, the lessons that I've learned is, you know, we still do products. I mean, we're actually doing a product for the smartwatch. We still do, you know, products, but I want to make smart bets.
Do you make smart bets? How does someone in your position make smart bets?
Not betting the entire company.
Okay.
Not making it the focus of the company. You know, just pull a small team aside, validate the idea, try to do the product. I mean, we've Some of the projects, you know, we just validated the idea. We didn't see a market. We didn't even build the full product.
Do you have an example of that?
Yeah, we tried to do a sales outreach product. So what, you know, we actually fleshed out the wireframes. We got a decent stage on what the product is going to be, and then we actually talked to a few customers. They all liked it, but then we realized there were two other companies that did exactly the same thing with all the functionality.
I see.
And then we said, okay, it doesn't make too much sense for us to do it. But you never know. With a lot of these decisions, maybe if we just stuck it out and we continued doing it, maybe we. But I mean, you just have to make a call. Hey, can I invest, you know, 6 months on the of development time on this product? Do I have the confidence that it's going to make it? So,
and the feedback that you got back was, yeah, it's good, but hey, we also have these other products out there, so maybe yours isn't good enough yet. Or even if it is, it's competing against two products that are already established.
Yeah.
What are the two products that are established?
I don't remember the
okay.
names.
If you
this has been a bottom, yeah, a year ago.
If you were to redo the Craigslist app today, knowing what you know, how would you do it right?
I think I just set the expectations right.
Okay.
That this was a marketing piece for us, not. We wouldn't rely on revenues for it. It was just a marketing piece.
Okay.
But actually, you know, taking more of those small bets, I think, is more important than just doing one thing.
How could you have made the bet smaller?
Maybe launch on just one platform initially.
Oh, and you launched on Android too?
Yeah, iOS and Android.
Oh, I had no idea. Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Launch on one platform. Maybe I don't iterate as much as we did. We tried a lot of different ideas and stuff.
Okay. The article that I read here from the Wall Street Journal, this is from February 2013, about 2 years ago, said that at that point you already had Sidecar as a client and already had ThreadFlip. How did you get Sidecar as a client? How did you get Hipster as a client?
Hipster is an interesting story because I actually saw them on CNN. And there was this, basically CNN was saying, hey, you know, Silicon Valley is starving for talent. You know, this company is doing this, Hipster was doing, they were on a recruiting campaign and their pitch was, we'd give you $10,000 worth of Pabst blue ribbon beer. And all these weird kinds, yeah, hipster bicycle. So
that if you help them hire a developer, they're going to buy all this beer for you or buy this crazy bike for you. And the reason that they got on CNN is because CNN said, look at all the crazy things the Silicon Valley companies have to do to hire. And you said, wait, if they're that desperate, we could talk to them.
Yep, exactly. And I actually reached out to the CEO. And I said, hey, even before you can actually hire your developers, I can build a product for you. So at that time, I actually worked with Simple Geo on Path, and he actually did some reference checks, and he's like, okay, let's do it. So within 3 months, we had the product out for them. You know, we did the initial version, and exactly as we planned, they didn't even recruit a single person by the time we actually.
So they had nothing but an idea and some money. They didn't even have developers.
Developers. They had back-end developers. They actually had a really good designer. I'm actually a big fan of him, Steve Hoffman. So they had a designer. They had some back-end developers. They didn't have any mobile developers. So we built their iOS app.
I see. Wow, it's amazing that they could raise money for a mobile app, right? It's just a mobile app without a front-end developer.
Yeah. I mean, and I was there at their launch party, and Don Dodge was an angel investor, and I was talking to him, and I was like, you guys built the app?
They were incredibly, they got a lot of press.
Yeah.
I remember going to South by Southwest and seeing that everybody wanted to try, Hipster, actually, I'm thinking about the wrong app, aren't I? What did Hipster do?
It was a photo sharing app, but the thing was, they were on TechCrunch like 3 times even before they had a product, because they just had a landing page saying something awesome is coming to San Francisco. They generated a lot of press and Buzz.
Yeah, for a second there, I confused them with Highlight, which was another app that got a lot of attention. And Steve, who did the development for them, is the same guy from Hipmunk.
No, it's not this.
It's a different one. Okay.
I was talking about designer. He was also one of the co-founders. So it wasn't a blank slate. You know, somebody gave them the money. They had the back-end development done. They had design.
I see. All right. And you also said that you were on a list with a venture capital firm, a CTO list. What's that?
That's the same stuff that we talked about initially. You know, Joe Stump put us on CTO list of First Round Capital.
What does that mean, a CTO list? That means a list that CTOs would look to if they needed developers?
Developers are, would, I think it's an email list. They would email each other saying, hey, you know, I'm looking for something.
I see.
I don't know the internal, you know, how they actually manage.
You mean a mailing list?
Yeah. Could be a mailing. Yeah.
Got it. And so because you're on the mailing list, they get to know you, you're chatting with each other, and that helped you get some credibility and recognition in the community.
Yeah, it's there internally. We're also actually on, so we had Google actually reach out to us like 3 times now for 3 different projects. And I asked them, hey, you know, how did you hear about us? And here's, they said, you know, one of the developer advocates put you on a top 10 Android development firms. And so we don't know what that list is, but we are on a top 10 list within Google.
I see. You finally figured out how to charge right. How did you figure that out?
I think when we got the first real salesperson, he was like, okay, I mean, you guys do all this amazing work, and are we charging, you know, $8,500 an hour? That doesn't make too much sense. So,
wait, who said this to you? Your client said that?
No, our first salesperson.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. And that's when you started to raise your rates a little bit.
Yeah.
How much did you raise your rates by?
I'd say we actually raised our rates almost by 100% now.
And no pushback?
We've had pushback from startups, but you know, right now we actually have, you know, bigger clients, AT&T's, you know, Sanders, starting some engagements with DirecTV, Plantronics, and also, you know, well-established startups like, you know, Glassdoor, LegalZoom. These are companies that can actually pay the market rate for good development and design resources. I mean, we do incredible design too. I mean, one of our designers is actually based out of Chicago. She actually was actually a creative director for BarackObama.com.
For what?
For BarackObama.com.
Oh, BarackObama.com. I see. So how do you recruit people like that? I'm looking at your early design work. It's not nearly as good as it is today.
Yeah, and if you actually go to mokia.com/new, it's like we're actually doing a new website. But yeah, I mean, the first step was we actually acquired a small design firm that we used to work with initially. Mm-hmm. So we both are principals are part of the team. I think one of the things that people like with us is we give them incredible freedom. You know, there is no micromanagement, even whether it's design or development. The reason that a lot of these developers, that they can actually go out today and get a job at Google or Facebook. One of the constraints is location for sure, but they can actually get equally good jobs. The thing that they like is the freedom that we give them.
You give them freedom if it's your clients who are looking for a specific kind of product. And so aren't they imposing some rigidity on the process?
There is some process that's dictated by the client, but freedom in the sense they get to work on great projects. There's nobody micromanaging time. We don't ask them to actually log hours or anything. We don't tie them to.
You just say, here's a project, get it done when you can.
Yeah, we use really good tools. We use GitHub, so every line of code is transparently visible. We use Slack. Every project gets its own room. So whenever somebody comes code in GitHub, it shows up on Slack. So these are autonomous teams. Yeah, every project has like 2 or 3 people teams. They work very independently, very minimal, you know, management for the sake of management.
What kind of direction do you give them?
We have product managers that actually set the milestones and everything. Mm-hmm. But from an overall direction, right? My goal is for this, for Mocha to be a place where people can actually do their best work. So the thing that I keep I keep trying to push is, do your best work. Look at this as a craft. Try to improve. Basically looking at this as a craft and actually making small incremental progress. Doing for instance, with iOS, we now have Swift. A lot of our developers actually are doing new projects in Swift instead of Objective-C.
I see. Your revenue, where is it now?
Did that Wall Street Journal article have a revenue number in there?
Oh, I don't remember where I saw what the revenue was. This was 2013. Do you remember what the revenue was at the time? It does. It says, founded in 2009, Mocria did $1 million in 2012, large part because Silicon Valley startups can't find and hire talent quickly enough.
Yeah, and so multiple of that at this point.
So 2014 was multiple million dollars, more than 10 million?
No.
Somewhere between 5 and 10?
Less than that.
Less than that, okay. So look at this. The same article says Sidecar raised $10 million Series A round. Do you ever look at those companies and say, look, they're raising tons of money. I'm here, still a bootstrapper, still trying to hire, still trying to pay attention to the bills on a slow basis, and they're just zipping past me. We got to get out of this. Maybe we buy one of these startups or we start, I guess that is what you're thinking. We should create our own product and then take off like these guys are.
If you compare with every other startup that gets funding,
that's painful.
Yeah, it's not a viable way to actually look at things. So for me, what's important is that we want to build a company, a long-term company. We will take shots at products on the side, but we have a healthy revenue-generating business, and a lot of the tech startups that we helped back in the day are not even there anymore. So in that sense,
have much more stability than they do. So yes, some of them end up raising tens of millions of dollars or millions of dollars and they take off, but many of them end up disappearing. You want more of a consistent, predictable business with the option for an upside, and that's why you're building products on the side.
Yeah.
All right. What's the best part of having built this whole business?
For me, it's a team that part of it. I guess we were a little lucky. We have an incredible team that we've been able to assemble. I'm incredibly proud of that, the team that we've built. We're still in the early stages. I think there's a lot of potential. I look at this from a very long-term standpoint, so there is still a lot of potential.
Yeah, I can see it. I mean, the level of companies that you're working for just keeps getting bigger and bigger. You guys are working with SeaWorld. You're working with AT&T, as you said. Let me see.
SanDisk, DirecTV.
There you go.
Plantronics. We've had lots of conversations with Google, Samsung, Intel.
Cool. Congratulations on all your success. The website is Mocria, MOKRIYA.com. And I'm going to do some closing credits here today. I want to see if I want the audience to see a little bit more of how Mixergy interviews are done. So I've been hinting at the fact that we do pre-interviews, and the pre-interviews are done by Jeremy Weiss, who produced this interview. Research for this interview was done by Andrea Schumann. You were referred to us by Rajesh Sethi, who referred so many great people to me. That guy is an incredible connector, an incredible entrepreneur, too. I interviewed him. And this post will be put up on the site and written up by Ari Desormo. Ari Desormo, formerly you guys have seen her on the site as Ari Saint. That is just part of the team here at Mixergy that brings these interviews together, and I'm really grateful to them for doing it. And I'm grateful to you, Sunil, for coming here and telling your story.
Thank you, Andrew, and thank you for all the listeners. I think this is an incredible resource for entrepreneurs. I
mean, thanks.
Ones that are starting out, I'd recommend listening to a ton of these interviews.
One of the cool parts about doing this is that I used to say I want to do these interviews for people who will go out and build companies that are so great that I will then get to interview them. And you probably have heard me say that. You're smiling. You recognize it. And at the time, I wasn't sure when I first said it if that would ever come true. And now I see it more and more coming true. You are an example of that. I want to do hard-hitting, detailed interviews and just keep pushing myself to get better and better at them so that there's more useful information so that they're uplifting and inspiring, but also full of concrete ideas and techniques for building businesses. So the people who are listening to us today, the person who's listening to this interview will one day come here and do an interview on Mixergy. Sunil, thank you so much for being a Mixergy fan. Thank you so much now for coming and telling your story. And everyone out there, thank you for being a part of Mixergy. Bye, everyone.